We are back for part two of navigating relationships while trying to conceive. In this episode, we dive deeper into sex and intimacy. We discuss libido and sex while trying to conceive, during infertility, after pregnancy loss, connection with your partner, and relationship dynamics and advice. This episode is packed full of practical tips on how to navigate the complexity of all of this, what struggles with intimacy or sex in women and men may mean about your fertility, and we share our own personal experiences in this department. This is one of my favorite episodes so far, so let's get going. Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about.
And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes.
So part two now of our infertility conversations podcast episodes here. This one, we're going to talk more about the intimacy and sex side of things and how that part of your relationship is really affected. Some tips, some things to think about, some ways to kind of navigate that. Also, sex after loss, like a miscarriage. And, I'm sure that we'll also go off on some tangents, but last week's episode was revolving around, you know, trauma and communication as the root base of, you know, having a proper relationship in general, but how the relationship strain is heightened when there's infertility issues going on, all relationships around you, with your friends, with your partner, with everyone. And if we can be mature adults and address our problems and come at the conversations, in these different ways, how that can help. And one of the things we had intended on talking about in that episode was some of the sex dynamics, but we just decided to give it its whole own thing because everybody likes to talk about sex.
So exactly. Let's talk about sex, baby. Okay. Yes. You said that very eloquently, which was great what we talked about last time, but let's chat about the intimacy part when trying to conceive. So this can apply whether you're, you know, in the trying to conceive window before a year has come up, which is technically you're trying to conceive, you're not pregnant yet, but you aren't considered infertility, or what it's like after you have been diagnosed with infertility if you've been trying for more than a year, because conceiving naturally, you know, outside of IUI or IVF requires sex. And this is an interesting – sex in general is just so – complex, and it has many layers and facets to it. Everything from libido or the drive to want to have sex to the act of actually doing it to the emotions that can come up with it to the dynamics that can happen in a relationship. All of them can be complicated without even throwing in trying to conceive in the mix. But once you do, you know, you have other heightened emotions of grief if it's not happening, or you know, obsession with sort of how often or when you're doing it and where and not skipping a month, or it kind of can take the fun and the connection and the novelty and all of the beautiful things that can come with intimacy in your relationship out of the picture. And we're going to talk about what those are, how to kind of navigate that, and maybe some tips to keep the relationship strong and alive even during this process.
Yeah. Awesome. It's like you just said, I'm really glad that you did that, because I saw it building as a pyramid in my mind of like libido, desire, arousal, all of those components, the intimacy or the emotional connection aspect of things, you know, where people's love languages lie. Like, do they need to have a strong emotional connection before they feel like they want to become intimate with their partner, et cetera. And then now you're adding on this, like, you know, whether or not we're doing it on purpose, there's this sort of hope, but also pressure that this sex is going to result in a child. And, you know, when you want it yesterday, you want a newborn in your arms yesterday. And when it doesn't go like what you thought, there's just this whole, this thing that was just kind of for fun now becomes this thing that has a purpose. And then when that, sometimes when that purpose isn't met, it's like, well, what is going on?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really
complicated. Gosh, there's a lot to unpack. Yeah. So, you know, let's start with, I'm going to speak throughout this whole journey as if it's a struggle. So for some people, when they first start trying, it's super fun. And you're just like, oh my gosh, we're going to start trying for a baby. Let's just have sex all the time. So exciting. Like you're in the honeymoon phase of your life. That, and then, you know, hopefully for some people, it results in a baby. So I'm going to be speaking more to the people where that is not happening, where now this is stressful. It's not been the way you imagined it unfolding. Mm-hmm. So even if you, again, haven't been diagnosed with infertility, many people can still start experiencing that even just a few months into trying to conceive. So, oh, goodness.
And I can speak a little bit about sort of both from, you know, sex after loss or also just how fast your mind can go to really bad places when you don't become pregnant the month you think you're going to.
Yes, 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 yes. So, well, let's start with that in the sense of how – I don't know if you want to ask me questions or me ask you questions or we just kind of talk about it out in the open, but –
My, I'll just, let me start with my, and it'll probably trigger you because mine is a lot shorter. Mine was just the, you know, the first time I ever conceived a child, I got pregnant right away. And we did have sex like every day that month and my husband loved it. And then he was so disappointed when
I think I remember that.
Cause he was like, that's it. He's like, I thought it was going to be a lot longer. And I was obviously really happy. But then the second I became pregnant, my libido tanked. I wanted nothing to do with it, you know?
Mm-hmm. So I remember this.
And that's like its whole own thing too. You know, we do have an episode about libido. We have an episode about postpartum sex. So you guys can listen back on those aspects. We haven't quite talked about pregnant sex yet. I do have some posts on my Instagram feed, but still. So that was one aspect. And then when we went to go have our second child, we conceived right away again. Mm-hmm. And then I had a very early miscarriage, which although it was very early, it did rock my world. I was really shocked. I was really, I made all these extrapolations and meanings onto it that we were going to have secondary infertility and I was only going to have one child and da 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 da, this, that, and the other. And it was also very painful, crampy, so much blood. You know, I was really surprised. I was maybe five, 6 weeks. But then the sex after that became a mission and it was weird. It had this weird flavor of like, I could kind of tell I feel like my husband was being used sort of because my natural libido wasn't that often, but I wanted that baby. Like I had made in my mind that I was going to get pregnant and it was like a total mission thing. It was like, I was too heady. It was very difficult to be in my body and enjoy it in that kind of a way, which is, you know, one of the beautiful aspects about sex. And I knew it was happening in the moment and I felt bad about it. I felt weird about it. Then I had guilt, you know, there's so many things, but I was like, but we do want to, you know, I'm ovulating though. Like how many months is this going to go on? Like we need to do it, you know, even if we kind of weren't really feeling it, we'd get home late from something. And then I was like, well, you know, it's sort of weird. And I don't really know if anybody ever talks about this. It just has a different energy and maybe it's just okay. Like maybe we just need to recognize that it's kind of like that sometimes, or maybe I could have approached it differently. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, no, you bring up a point that people struggling with trying to conceive an infertility feel very, very much aligned with, that you're not crazy because that is what it feels like. It feels like a job. It feels like having sex is now this job that you have to schedule out and have at a specific time. And there is a way to continue to have sex while trying to conceive where it feels very fun and lighthearted and you get to be together so much that, you know, you really are just kind of having sex all the time. And so you're not really keeping track of when you ovulate or, you know, when the fertile window is. But I would say that is the exception, not the rule, in that most people who are trying to conceive, maybe it starts that way. And then every month when there's a negative pregnancy test, the grief that starts to set in is something that can definitely impact, especially females and males. It can impact both their desire to want to have sex, yet they need to have sex to continue to try for this baby. So it's a very complicated emotional experience to navigate because libido and the desire for sex and intimacy in general typically happens when you feel very safe, when you feel very connected, when you are not in your head. Like you said, you're not heady, you're not stressed. all of these things typically block the energetics of sex and intimacy. And imagine, you know, you find out that like your cat died and then you guys need to go have sex.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And it's just like, no, like no one wants to do that when they're really sad. And for most people, you know, it's just like, no. But the reality of trying to conceive is, you know, you go around the time when your period should come. And if your period comes or you take a pregnancy test before and it's negative, there are micro griefs and they're not even micro. I mean, when I was going through it, it's like full on grief every mm-hmm. month. And you have to sit there in the bathroom having the realization that like you are not pregnant yet again.
Yep.
And then you have 2 weeks to pull yourself together. Not even 2 weeks, like 10 days if you have a normal cycle, before you have to jump right back into it again. And there can be blame emotions that can come up where it's like, you know, why aren't we getting pregnant? Is it me? You know, you start blaming yourself, which affects your confidence, which can affect, you know, your feeling in connection to being a woman, you know, if you're a woman listening to this. And that is needed. Like your sense of sensuality, your sense of your womanliness, your sense of self is very much needed to be connected to your sexuality. So mm-hmm. some women will feel like, you know, they're less of a woman, or, you know, there's something wrong with me, or, you know, the man will feel similar if they feel like, why can't I give my partner this baby? I don't feel like a man. That's very demasculinizing to yeah. a man to not be able to, you know, to give their partner a child. And testosterone is the main hormone in men that is needed to create an erection and to, you know, be present in large amounts to have a sexual experience. And we know that certain feelings and emotions can reduce testosterone and can affect a man's libido, very much so. And feelings of inadequacy or feelings of failure or feelings of guilt, all of those are huge testosterone blockers and huge libido and sexuality blockers. You know, like imagine if a guy just got yelled at because he was told that, you know, you're not a man, you know, you can't do X, Y, Z, blah, blah, like all of these horrible things. And then they like come home and they just feel really bad about themselves. And then you think they're going to want to try to go have sex with their partner who's also grieving because she lost her cat? I mean, it's just like, you know what I mean? Like that's infertility is
yeah.
both partners feel inadequate. Both partners are grieving and feel sad and frustrated.
And now you're like supposed to go into this connection together, but there's like this unspoken elephant in the room that's like, okay, let's make this really fun. And mm-hmm. again, let's like hope this works, but you're both just kind of like in this energy that mm-hmm. sucks and doesn't mm-hmm. feel good. And it's not like there's anything, you know, it's not wrong that this happens. It just does. It's like mm-hmm. it's a dynamic that happens, and we need to recognize that it happens so that we can kind of come up with some solutions and pull ourselves mm-hmm. out of it. And even I think having a conversation, I think that my husband and I did have a conversation about it.
Yeah.
About just, okay, this is the reality of this thing, is that this was just something that we did for fun and it felt good and we felt really good and connected afterwards. And now it's taken this energy of like purpose and rush and pressure and disappointment. And, you know, he obviously wasn't feeling all the things I was, because I was obsessively taking pregnancy tests, you know, 10 days post ovulation mm-hmm. until I saw something or not. And then calculating out, like you said, calculating mm-hmm. out when was my next ovulation and da da da, and really trying to plan and mm-hmm. just it is not conducive to baby making energy anyway, when you're calling in a soul, right. If we're going to take like a conscious conception sort of angle, mm-hmm. It's really difficult to maintain presence. So conscious conception, just to like really quickly define it for people who've never heard that idea, is this idea that you are connecting with the baby's soul somehow, or maybe even just like theoretically, or you know, saying, okay, well, there is definitely a baby soul out there that you're going to be calling in mm-hmm. to a physical body form in your womb, and sort of being open to with your partner as well, that this sexual event is more than just sperm meeting egg. It's like the energy, it's the creative energy of love and the culmination of your whole relationship. And, mm-hmm. you know, it can be this really cool thing. I don't mean to say that in a mocking way, like that it's cheesy and it's blah, 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 whatever. No, it's like, it actually can be really, really special. Mm-hmm. It's just that if you have had month after month after month of disappointment, or even just a couple months, I mean, your mind goes to crazy places. Just a couple of months of not conceiving after that miscarriage, I was like, oh my God, it's us. It's happening to us. Like, it has happened. Yeah. And it really took all of that like magic out of it. And it just sucks.
Yeah, it does suck. It does suck. So, you know, not everybody experiences it similarly. I have patients who, you know, at least report to me that they still are finding really beautiful ways to connect and have intimacy, even though, you know, many miscarriages, many losses. And I think it comes down to the person and kind of where they go. If you tend to be more of an anxiety-driven person, I think that it can be a little bit more challenging, because that you go into the sexual encounter anxious, which are the hormones and emotions that block the hormones and emotions of sex. So basically, I think a lot of people going through this can kind of relate to that story of just, it's not fun. There's not a lot of novelty. Maybe there's not a lot of, you know, connection. It feels like a chore. It feels really a lot of pressure. And both partners, you know, men, again, I keep speaking to them, not that my husband and I have ever had an issue in that department whatsoever. Like, he hasn't, but a lot of men can and do. And this is a topic that a lot of people don't talk about, which is impotence and the inability for a man to even get an erection. And that makes intercourse very challenging. And again, this can come up. So if you're listening to this and this is your partner, you're not alone. And that if a man is feeling inadequate or feeling like they are having a lot of emotions around those kind of things, the ability for a man to have an erection is very mental, emotional.
That's really interesting. I've never heard. So you've had patients that becomes an issue. It wasn't ever an issue beforehand. And then now they're trying to conceive and now they're having like an erectile dysfunction kind of problem.
Oh yeah. Because erectile dysfunction most of the time is a mental, emotional thing.
Wow.
So not always, but sometimes. And I'm not like an erectile dysfunction specialist. There are people that
why not? You know, come on.
but it is just something to bring up because I do a lot with libido. So I see a lot of the two dynamics of men and women. And a lot of times I'm seeing women, but obviously their partner is a part of that situation. And so and sometimes the other thing to keep in mind with infertility, and I'll speak to the women component about this, but men, it's again, it's more obvious because there's almost like this pressure for them to perform. Like they have to actually do maybe a little bit more than the female who's kind of just receiving, you know, like, okay, honey, it's my ovulation. Let's go have sex. And if he can't just like get it up in that moment, that's very stressful, right?
Okay.
So she can just kind of be there available at any time. Yes. Obviously you want to be like receiving, you know, and be wet and open and all of that. But like a man has to actually like perform, and it's like, well, I just got back from a business trip. Like, you know, it's like 11 o'clock at night. I'm tired. But she's like, no, it's my ovulation. You have to do it right now. Like we have, this is the window. And then like the pressure on him, you know what I mean?
Yes. And then it becomes not fun and everybody, and then you're just silent and you're like, no, what is this?
It's like The Handmaid's Tale. It's so sad.
Oh, no.
I know. But it's, you know, this is a real reality for some people. Yeah. And the other piece with that is if your infertility journey is male factor in any way, if there's low testosterone, which is a big factor in infertility, let's say you might not even know. Maybe you're just like 6 months trying to conceive. If your partner does not wake up with an erection, or if he has a hard time getting an erection, there might be a low testosterone picture, and that will cause low sperm, and low sperm will lead to struggle conceiving and infertility. Anything that affects testosterone affects libido and sex, and it also affects sperm. So if you are a couple having challenges with conceiving, whether you have checked him or not, there is a high likelihood that it can also impact sex, and vice versa. If you find that you know, he doesn't really want to have sex with you that much. He never really has, not much of a libido kind of guy. You really have to kind of pull it out of him. I would get his sperm checked ASAP because it is a high likelihood that he has lower testosterone, because it's the testosterone in a man that makes him want to have sex all the time and, you know, is able to do all of these things.
That's such a good point. That is a really, really good point, because people, I think, just sort of normalize it that, oh, it's just his personality and whatever. No. And I mean, I guess there's like a component of that, but it is very much a – it could be at least a quite bright star clue that there may not be enough swimmers. And if you are going to – so say you're like a couple, you're married, you're not really quite looking to have kids yet, but very soon, you know, you're sort of planning it and this is your picture – take this as your sign to investigate, and it's not over the top. I don't know why. I feel like for some reason there's this cultural sort of tenet that getting sperm checked is like really bougie or like out of like the norm. And it's like, it's such a weird place to start. It's like, no, it's not. It's the easiest thing in the world to test. God,
so easy.
And it costs like what, $150, $125? It's really not. There are so many more expensive tests that happen to women to rule in or out fertility issues when he has to ejaculate into a cup, and then we get so much information. And as we've talked about in past episodes, the sperm analysis one or a sperm, you know, health one, sperm is so easy to influence that we can be doing that. You can be doing, say you're planning your wedding and you know you want to conceive pretty much as soon as you're married, but you're in that process that, you know, 9-12 months, whatever, out from your wedding, get his sperm checked. Have him start taking some things, look at his health, look at his toxins, et cetera, so that you're not then starting this process, right? And I know this is your whole gripe with the IVF model too, and that episode is so good. I think it's one of the first ones. And it's just, it's like these are clues, and but that no one is talking about and no one is connecting, because the doctors don't really have time to talk about it because of insurance models. It's not because it's not in their head. It's not because it's not in their heart to care.
Right.
The way the system is set up is not conducive to normal, you know, just teasing out these little root cause things. It's very much like shuttle them into something with a pill or a procedure because it makes more money. And
And the shame that is so taught in our culture around struggles with sex is not – there's so much shame around it that no one talks about it, not only with their partner, but definitely not with their doctor.
Yeah.
So no one would even know unless they happened upon a podcast like this to be like, oh, that's a concern or an issue. So I just want to highlight that, because unless you had a lens into the world that I'm in, it's like, why would you know that, you know? And so it's not like anyone's fault that they don't know these things, but that's a big sign. So I just want to speak to that, because intimacy ultimately is a blending of the masculine and feminine energies. And that does not mean boy and girl. We've talked about this in our past libido relationship. But if you are a female in a heterosexual relationship and you are more of the feminine essence, more of the receiving energy, and your partner is not able to step into more of that masculine energy role, a big part of the physiology that could drive that is more of the testosterone and picture there, then it can cause a lot of issues with intimacy, and it can make it feel like you're having sex with like a relative, or, you know, not that you are,
because
but
it needs to be a dynamic change.
A dynamic change.
Yes. Someone needs to be the more masculine. Someone needs to be more the more feminine. If you guys are like in a similar boat, it won't, you won't have that draw and attraction.
That polarity.
Yes. The polarity that's needed for like the desire to be spontaneous and be there. I do have a follow-up question for you, which is that is there anything with a woman's physiology or women's desire or libido or ability to get wet, et cetera, that maybe correlates with her fertility markers?
Yes. So let's talk about the girl now. So boy first, girl now second. And again, if you're in like a same-sex relationship, you're probably not having sex to have a baby. So we don't necessarily need to talk about that. You would do different routes of conception. But for a female, there it's complicated, because in order to be fully turned on and aroused, you should generate some of your own sexual fluids. You know, like the slang word is like getting wet, you know, like when people say that. But
like Nicki Minaj or something. Megan Thee Stallion. That's what I'm trying to say.
I don't even know. You know pop culture. I don't. But
really bad song. Anyway.
Anyways, so being able to get wet is a sign of having adequate estrogen. So the classic, I have vaginal dryness, could be low estrogen. However, I have seen it in patients and experienced it myself that you can have plenty of estrogen and still have issues there if you have really low testosterone. So testosterone and estrogen are actually both important, and they're both important for fertility. I would pair, so your ability to have a libido is very complicated. If you don't have the drive to have sex, it doesn't inherently mean that there's any issue with your fertility, because there are many layers and levels to that. Arousal, which is, okay, someone is like touching you, you're starting to engage in intimacy and foreplay. Can you actually become aroused? Can you feel sexual feelings? Can you, you know, get any sort of physiological or physical body response to intimacy? That's arousal. And if that is not working well, it's more of an alarming sign to me to look at your hormones. But again, not definitive that there's any issue there, because there can be trauma responses and other things with that as well. However, if anything just doesn't feel like it's working well physiologically, it's definitely a sign to check your hormones and make sure that you have adequate estrogen, that you are ovulating, that you have adequate testosterone. Estrogen is needed to induce ovulation. If you don't have enough estrogen, then you can't ovulate. Another sign for you to look at that is your period. If you have a very light period, if you're barely bleeding, if you don't even have to use a tampon or a cup and you're just kind of bleeding on a pad a few days, that could be another sign of really low estrogen. It could cause you to have a hard time getting wet. It could cause you having a hard time with arousal, and it could lead to issues with fertility, both building enough uterine lining to hold baby in your body and also having enough estrogen to trigger ovulation. So these are kind of clues for you if your intimate life is not going great. However, as I mentioned, both men and women are very impacted by the mental, emotional sphere of your life. So it is not uncommon. It is very common for women while they're going down the trying to conceive path to shift more into the masculine, because they're starting to hyper focus on the calendar and the schedule and when they're ovulating, and we have to do this, da, 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 and I'm managing everything, and here are all the supplements that you're taking, and we need to do this. And, you know, you start to become this micromanager of your life and your partner's life, which shifts you more into a stressful monkey mind, masculine energy. And on the flip side, a male partner, if he's kind of being dominated by his, you know, partner saying, we need to have sex now and do this, whatever. Again, depending on the dynamic of you and your partner and how you do that, it could make him maybe feel less of a man, demasculinized, because there's less of that spontaneous, like, let's just kind of have sex when it feels good and in the moment. Instead, he's kind of being told to have sex, you know, because this calendar says so. And no. Some men might be totally into that and like love it. And some men who are used to playing more of the masculine role, it might be harder for them. And kind of they start to feel a little demasculinized in that.
Or they may, they also just may kind of like lose attraction for you. Not
yes,
in a, not because they don't think you're pretty and da 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 all that stuff, but just because you've now kind of stepped into this role where they're they used to be in, and you're kind of, you are having these more masculine energy tendencies. I hope this is coming across like what we're talking about.
I know.
Go back and listen to that other episode. We'll leave it in the show notes, because I think you explain it in that episode very, very well.
Yeah.
It's not male, female. It's not boy, girl. It's not, it's nothing. It's an energetics. You know, the masculine is order and time and kind of power, control, those sorts of energies.
Yeah. And like the giving versus the giving, receiving, and like surrender.
Yes. And then female is receiving, creativity, going with the flow, you know, whatever, those kinds of things. So if you've been a man, a woman in a dynamic that was, you were a feminine woman, he was a masculine man, but now you are kind of like tripping out and getting all heady because you're wanting to get pregnant, which I think we all do to an extent, at least when we really want it and it's not happening, right? He could kind of be like that dynamic, that polarity that's needed to have a high sex drive, or like, you know, a libido and an attraction towards your partner in that way may change. And then that exacerbates things, because now you sort of maybe pick up on that. You like, you don't want to have sex with me. Like, what's going on? And then the sex isn't working. It's not giving you the baby. Everything is just crashing down.
I know. And it's, again, I wish I could, like, I think I said this in the other episode, like Harry Potter, where they like take the memory out of their like mind and put it in the little ball. Like, I wish I could just do that to people. But I am actually working on writing up the masculine feminine dynamic for my fertility formula program. But, sometimes in partnership, the female partner in heterosexual relationship, the female partner is more masculine essence by nature. and the male partner is just more feminine essence by nature, which there's nothing wrong with that at all. She's more like the boss babe and he's more like the nurturer kind of role. Mm-hmm. And in that situation, maybe their relationship would notice less of a switch when the trying to conceive journey comes. Maybe not, but it just depends. The thing though, what is challenging and what I talk about in the dynamic of fertility is the feminine essence or the yin essence is the essence of life creation. Mm-hmm. So no matter how you are as a being, your like kind of innate way of being, the act of creating life is a little bit more of the feminine essence. It's a little bit more of the receiving energy, a little bit more of the in the flow energy, a little bit more of the, you know, less of the control energy. So this is a struggle that I see a lot of times with couples is that shift. They don't understand it. No one has words to put to these things necessarily. They just identify it as, you know, I feel like I'm having sex with my best friend. I don't feel like I have a partner much anymore. There's not this like passion. There's no spark. There's like, I just feel like it's a job. There's none of that. And so part of that is this dynamic shift of the masculine and feminine. And so what do you do about that? It's important to be aware as a woman of your ovulation. That is helpful unless you have the luxury of really having sex like every other day or every third day all the time. If you have that kind of a relationship and you personally have, you know, a libido that can do that and your jobs and everything aligns for you to do that, then my recommendation is just have sex every 2 to 3 days for always, and don't even worry about when you ovulate. Don't even look at the calendar. Don't think about it. Don't stress about it. Really focus on intimacy and connecting with your partner. If you don't have that luxury, let's say your partner travels or, you know, you guys just don't have it in you to have sex that much, then you do need to roughly know when you ovulate. That is true. But I would advise for people to not hyper focus on it to the point of, you know, I have patients too where it's like, okay, I just checked my LH and it's spiking. So like, what exact hour do we need to have sex? You know? Oh, and it's like, yeah. Oh, and my heart breaks for them because it's like, of course. And there is so much reality to that, that there is a nice window of time for sure that is more ideal. But what I teach and what I hope people kind of get across is in this world, it's probably in every world, but this is the world I'm in thick and heavy. You really have to move through the world holding two ideas at the same time. Mm-hmm. Always.
Always.
And I understand that that can feel challenging and it takes practice, but you have to hold the idea of knowing the things to do that optimize fertility and also releasing the control of that. And moving mm-hmm. through the world with as much peace and surrender while also knowing what to do. And I know those are contradictory, but mm-hmm. that's just what you have to do. So
no, it's so true. And it's like what you talked about in the detox episode. You know, it's like we need to be mindful of these things and not let the anxiety overrule, where the actual anxiety, the effect, net effect of that on your body would be more detrimental than the toxins themselves.
Yes.
Or, you know, don't be it's hard not to say, don't do this. And we talk about this actually a lot in the don't relax or just mm-hmm. relax episode, but it's like, yeah, don't test, don't da da da. It's hard to tell people that when they're like, cause I get it. And I mm-hmm. haven't even had very many months of trying and not being successful. I can't even imagine when it becomes mm-hmm. years and years, you know, you want to just be like knowing. But as my really great therapist would have said, be a scientist. Is it helping? Is what you're mm-hmm. doing currently helping? If it's not, try something different.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Is it working? Is it helping? If it's not, like, okay, then let's try something different. And I think what you're saying, right, is we have to know that in the back burner, but live more in the embodied experience of this other mindset.
Yes.
Where your hormones, your nervous system, everything is not getting wigged out by this mm-hmm. information. It's the base level sort of pyramid bottom. You have it in the back of your mind. You're not being ruled by it though.
Yes. Right. And it's subtle, and it's going to be the hardest for those who have more of an anxiety pattern tendency. But the more that you can practice, this is infertility or trying to conceive, you know, let's just say trying to conceive, because those with infertility are still trying to conceive, is a really big ask from the universe, from God, all of the things above us, to practice like a mindful meditation. Your life becomes a whole mindful meditation. And in meditation, we're taught, you know, you sit and thoughts come in your mind and you acknowledge them and you let them float by and you just bring your attention back to something, back to your breath, back to whatever you're focusing on. And with infertility, there's, or trying to conceive is sort of similar in that you know what you need to know. You learn what you need to learn. You know when your ovulation is. You know, that's the key thing, you know, obviously with conceiving, with sex. But the meditation is to bring your mind back to exactly this embodied way of living, this fertile energy, surrender, connection to yourself, connection to your body, connection to your partner, connection to things that are, you know, beautiful and all of these things around you, because the masculine energy, the headiness, the anxiety, the stress, the control, the pressure energetically pushes away that which you want the most.
Yes.
And it's, again, I can say this and you can be mad at me if you're going through trying to conceive and you're like, you don't understand. It's like, I do understand. Like I do, you know, for 6 years, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, it's a long time to be trying to conceive and navigating this. And we had sexual issues on top of it, low libido issues and painful sex. So I do understand, not what you're going through, but everyone's unique. But just, I can speak to this in that it feels counterintuitive and maybe insulting, but even if you are doing all the things, even if you have to go through IUI, IVF and get support, always kind of coming back to like you and your core self and not losing yourself and not losing your partner in this process is so huge and is not talked about enough. And I think this is why relationships struggle so much in this journey, because we lose ourselves.
Yeah.
And the pursuit of wanting the baby becomes so much greater than the connection that we have with ourselves or our partner, that then it all just crumbles and fades away. So with that being said, how do we do this? First and foremost, I would say, like I said, know your ovulation roughly. Have a conversation with your partner about what you're doing and why this is important, and that there is a reality that you guys have to have sex at a certain time. If your partner doesn't know that, if you don't know that, first and foremost, take my Master Your Cycle course, because you need to learn when you ovulate. That is helpful and important, unless you are that person who can just have sex about every other day or every third day for like ongoing. If you could do that, don't even stress about it. You don't need to
know. That's because, just in case people don't know, sperm can live in the vagina for, or up in, you know, the uterus and the tubes for up to 5 days. So if you're having sex on average every 2 to 3 days, there's going to be sperm around, so that whenever you do drop that egg, the sperm will already be up there waiting and is fine. But if you maybe have sex 2 or 3 times a month, it's not probably going to be enough, or unless you have it already just naturally timed, because maybe you have like your normal natural libido spike around ovulation, something like that. But otherwise, it is good to know the signs and the symptoms and whatever. So taking a course, learning that cycle, you know, you would be blown away by the amount of DMs that I get on Instagram of women who have clearly no clue when they're, and it's not their fault to blame, but you know, they'll ask me questions about when they could get a positive pregnancy test or whatever. And it really just shows me that they don't understand the cycle. They don't understand their monthly menstrual cycle, and no one ever has taught them it. So I get it. It's like Excel spreadsheets. How do we just are born with this knowledge of how to work an Excel spreadsheet if someone doesn't teach you?
Right.
Yes. So investing in a course like that can change your life.
Yeah. So it can. So plug it. That's step number one, learn your ovulation and have your partner learn so that he knows what the goal is. Because if he, like, sometimes men are being just directed by their partners to like do X, Y, Z. And if he's invested, the more he's invested in what's going on, in the sense of, okay, this is what happens. You know, I ovulate mid cycle. These are the kind of signs and symptoms. Sperm lives for X days in the vaginal canal and the uterus. And so we need to have sex around this time. Then he's more on board with what's going on. So you guys know the nitty gritty of it. And then if you are not a couple who can have sex every other, every third day ongoing, then I would, what I tell my couples is if you travel or do different things, know roughly when that window is and plan about a week before and a few days after ovulation. Like give yourself like a good 7-day time where you know that you guys need to be able to be intimate together every other day or every third day for those period of time. And maybe that's when you plan a date night. Maybe that's when you, you know, block off your calendar so that you don't have a bunch of late meetings or, you know, anything that you can say no to. You free up your schedule as much as possible. Try to rearrange your life so that the heavy hitting, late night, stressful stuff in your life is on the outskirts of that window so that you're not both working, you know, 12-hour days coming home at midnight and then you just are like, you know, have sex with me. Let me like put my legs up and, you know, you go into the bathroom and we like don't even look at each other. There was no kissing because we're exhausted. You know, I've been there. I've done that. Don't do that. You know, if you can't help it. Because again, that's not going to be good for you and your relationship. It's not necessarily going to be good for your fertility journey. So creating that situation. The other thing is learning your love languages. Like we've talked about in previous relationship or in previous episodes, we all have different love languages of how we connect. And not that intimacy and connection is required for sex with fertility. Like people can become pregnant even accidentally if they don't know each other, like each other, it doesn't matter. You know, like, you know, egg and sperm can come together. But to keep a relationship strong, intimacy is a part of that. And the best way is to understand yourself first and foremost, and then understand your partner. And then communicate that so that you guys can help each other through this journey. So after you've kind of gotten over, after you know your ovulation, you kind of schedule in your calendar. It shouldn't be a side effect thing of like, oh, we have to have sex right now. Like have it be mindful in that way. But then really learn each other's love languages of what do you need to connect? So how do we stay connected so that there's other pieces of our intimacy that are tying us together during that week or even the whole month of your time that is not just here is like the intercourse act that has to happen for conception, you know? So if you don't know what your love language is, you know, get that book, learn about it, read and find out what it is. Some people it's words of affirmation. Some people it's physical touch. Some people it's quality time. If you are a person who requires something different than your partner, then you guys both need to know what they are so that, and you need to tell them what you need in order to feel connected. For example, if you're a words of affirmation person, but your partner's a quality time love language, you need to kind of work it into your life and into the knowing of your schedules and everything that if you ask your partner, in order for me to feel connected to you, I would really love to like hear from you throughout the day. Or I would love if you left me a note. I know that's not how you give love, but that's how I receive love. And that's what I need from you to feel connected. So, you know, just it's not going to come inherent to the person if it's not their love language to give that way, but they need
you'll learn.
Yes.
And it becomes a habit and it feels kind of forced and hokey and weird and hokey pokey in the beginning because you're like, I don't really want to do this. And this isn't how I would normally do it or give it or whatever, but it's just like learning, oh yeah, my partner really hates seafood. Okay. Well then you're not going to like cook them fish all the time. It's just like another one of those things that we just sort of need to accept this and move on. And we will integrate it in our own ways. You know, like it doesn't have to feel super foreign and I don't know, like ingenuine. You'll make it in your own way, but if we act like this doesn't matter, you know, if somebody were to give me gifts, anything to do with gifts, actually, I really suck at. I'm bad at giving them. I'm bad at getting them. I don't care actually that much about getting them. I really admire people who put a lot of time and effort into like cute little gift baskets and stuff. Cause I'm like, man, I just, that is not how my brain works. I can't do that. I don't even know how you would even think of that, you know? But like, if that's all that I ever got and I didn't get the quality time, cause I am quality time. I would feel really like alone, you know? And that's a totally normal thing. And when it comes to creating a strong relationship, regardless of having this infertility kind of or trying to conceive journey, we need to be able to have that as like a very, very strong dynamic to our relationship. And then, okay, now you're going to get pregnant and you're going to have kids and things are going to go get hard. Like there are challenges in having children. And if we can work on these relationship dynamics before, you know, mm-hmm. you have children, then all the better to you. It's so really better. Don't discount this.
Yeah, no, it's life training for your whole relationship moving forward. So basically, in order to feel connected, some people and a lot of men too will be like, oh, it's physical touch because they like sex. It doesn't mm-hmm. necessarily mean that that's the case. Liking sex is like a separate thing, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes people can have physical touch as their love language and sometimes it's different. But let's say what I see happen in the trying to conceive world is that most people just don't even know their love languages or they don't prioritize giving them attention and they naturally all crumble and like get ignored. So for example, if you're a words of affirmation person, if your partner isn't and they're not being mindful of that, very few words are spoken. Again, it becomes a chore. You hardly even talk to each other. If you're a quality time person, if the quality time isn't scheduled into the thing, it does. It's like you come home from work, you have sex because it's the time and like you don't even really like talk or connect. And doing that every month over and over again, mixed with all the thoughts and feelings and emotions of the grief and the loss and the stress and the financial stuff, it can wear on you. So how do you navigate that? How do you supersede that? You know, I have a relationship that has done that to prove that this is possible mm-hmm. and that it is very important to be mindful and remind your partner over and over again and check in with them. You know, I recommend having a monthly check-in. I think doing at least a monthly date night is very important. And if you currently don't have children, if this isn't like a second or third trying to conceive and it's your first, you should have plenty of ample time to have a date night. It doesn't even have to be going out to a restaurant. You could pack a picnic and go to a park. You could do anything, but just that you are out of your normal routine and you are together without distractions. And it could be at that time that you guys connect and check in on like, okay, where are we at? How are you feeling? Tell me what's coming up for you. You know, what do we need to do to help you feel connected? If your partner isn't a talker, you know, if they're, you know, acts of service or something, you know, are you feeling loved from me this month? How can I support more in that and vice versa? So opening up those channels, checking in on that, and then doing the things that help you feel connected to your partner because that connection is the core underlying foundation of it all.
I love that.
The other piece on top of the love languages is to bring in novelty. Now, when I teach my libido stuff, not everybody values novelty as one of their pillars of passion. That's what I call it. I love all my little things.
Little alliterations.
But a lot of people like novelty, not everybody. But that's another thing. So I see love languages go to the side. I see communication go to the side. And I see a lot of novelty get kind of pushed out the window in the trying to conceive process. And intimacy requires polarity and excitement. So we've talked about the masculine and feminine dynamic. We've talked about the love languages. We've talked about that. So with novelty, that's something different, but it does create excitement that creates more of that electrical that electrical spark between people and around an exciting thing. And everyone finds novelty kind of different. Novelty means something new, different. So the thing you hear all the time from couples trying to conceive is it feels so monotonous. It feels so routine. It feels like it's just a chore. You know, we just do the same position all the time, whatever. It's just like we have to get it done. Like it's just this act of injecting sperm into my body. And so I encourage you to really, it doesn't have to be all month because that can be a lot of work. I get that. But just that one pocket of week with it heavier tilted toward the beginning of ovulation because sperm can live up to 5 days. So you have a much better chance of conceiving if you have sex before ovulation. Mm-hmm. A day after ovulation, your window's gone. So focus more of the attention and energy about a week after your period, about a week before ovulation, up to and through ovulation about 1 or 2 days, you know, chunk that off on your calendar, say intimacy time, you know, with my partner. That's when you plan your date night. That's when you check in and maybe do something that is novel. For some people, that is going on a date, you know, to a different location, to a different park, to a different restaurant, going on a walk, going on a drive, doing something different. You know, if finances allow, maybe going on a staycation and staying at a hotel somewhere different. Like all of these things can create this excitement that makes sex interesting. Try different positions. Maybe get a toy for the bedroom, or if you
sex
like
in public. Role
play. I'm just kidding. Yeah. No, don't do that. But like, you know, maybe
get arrested together. It's fun.
It's so funny. Other time. But yeah, you know, if you like role playing, you know, maybe getting a costume or going to like a fun experience, like a trilogy party. You know, the trilogy full moon parties in San Diego, if you live in San Diego, are super wild. They're like mini Burning Man, you know, if you're into that kind of thing. But whatever kind of is exciting to you, do it together and pick things that can connect you where you're not talking about the baby, you're not talking about fertility, you're not talking about work or finances, you're just connecting. And it can just be one time a month. Like the, if you can't siphon off one evening or afternoon a month, like that's, things need to shift. There's like a big shift in priorities. And I have couples who literally won't even, they can't even do that. And that's a bigger conversation that we have to have, because that could be a big part of why you're not getting pregnant in the first place, you know, because there's not a lot of that connection. But let's say you are, you know, having sex, even doing things. So that's one piece of novelty. The other piece of what I really love is connecting more, if this is in your practice, on like more of a spiritual level. Mm-hmm. And the best practice ever, which people talk about in the intimacy space, yet a lot of people don't do it, is to just sit and look in each other's eyes.
Oh, and it's so hard. People hate that.
People hate it because you're so vulnerable and you're so exposed, but it is one of the most powerful ways for two beings to connect. And if you haven't ever done it, I mean, it's good to even practice on your own, staring in a mirror, and you'll find how hard it is to stare at yourself in a mirror, you know, set a timer for 3 minutes or so. But I highly recommend this practice with you and your partner. You get down on the floor or on a rug or on your bed and you set a timer. You can start with 1 minute if you are intimidated, but, you know, get it up to 3 to 5 minutes where you just sit and look in each other's eyes, you know, try not to laugh. I mean, if you do, whatever, but you're just, you want to hold that focus and not look away. It's amazing the connection, and the best sex that I've ever had in my life with my husband is when we've done practices like these first. And it can be really hard when you're trying to conceive, you know, you might start crying because all of a sudden you feel seen and you feel vulnerable, and maybe even, you know, maybe you've been rushing all day doing work things. You're very just like go, 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 trying to cover up your emotions and thoughts and feelings by doing and acting. And all of a sudden someone's like peering into your soul and it can like crack you wide open. But if you do, that's beautiful. Have that emotional experience, and that's connection.
This is a vulnerable experience. It's a whole, everything about it is vulnerable. And you could add to that layer too, to breathe together, to inhale and exhale kind of like in unison together. Woo, though, 3 to 5 minutes, that like makes me nervous. That feels like a really long time.
You can just start with like 30 seconds, you know?
No, you're so right. I mean, in that 1 minute, like, okay, we should all be able to do that. It's so true. We should all be able to do that. But that 1 minute feels like an eternity. And it's because we do kind of keep ourselves in the shell and protected. And you may be kind of, as this process has gone on, you know, like we talked about in part one, you may have projected some things that aren't true that you're imagining that your partner's thinking about. Maybe they don't want to have kids with me. Maybe they don't want to have kids at all, And it can be very, very vulnerable to be like really raw and open with another person, especially if maybe you have an avoidant attachment pattern or something that, that goes back to like attachment theory. You know, you're either secure, avoidant, or anxious. There's a couple others, but they're more outlier. Anyway, that is really, really significant though in connecting two souls really deeply. And back to like the kind of the conscious conception aspect of things. And, you know, whether you have like spiritual beliefs, religious beliefs, whatever it is, I feel like most of us have some kind of something that is, not that you don't have to, but there is a mystery, right, to the way that all of this happens. And we all have souls. There's a really big difference between an alive person and then a dead body. You can feel it. I mean, and it's not just that the heart's not pumping. There is a spirit that is gone now. It's kind of like Temple Grandin has that scene. Well, Claire Danes or whoever plays Temple Grandin in that movie, she goes up to the cow and she's like, the cow is dead. It's been slaughtered in a slaughterhouse. And she goes, where did the cow go? She has autism. But in her mind, she's like, where did it go? It's not here anymore. Like the cow's body, the big lump of carbon was still sitting there, but like something about that spirit was gone. And so in this conscious conception thing, or in these religious or spiritual vulnerabilities and connections with our partner, we're tapping into that place. And, you know, I talk about this a lot with birth too, is it is a spiritual event. You are calling down this being to come into material existence. And when you're conceiving, there's a level of that. And I think it's not to be disregarded. I don't think it's insignificant, truly. Yeah. Yes. Will people get pregnant on a one-night stand and they have no spiritual connection? Yes, of course. But there's still a lot to be said that that could just be that that person had has a spirit baby sort of like around them. The baby took the chance and opportunity that it had to get in. Yep. You know, we don't know. Who knows? We don't know. The fact that we would even try to conceptualize that we know everything about the universe is just so silly and so human of us.
I know. It's
so funny. And to me, you know, and you, right? Like we always talk about this. It's like, gosh, there's just so much spirit, like mystery. And I think that that's really beautiful. And anyway, I just think that this can be such a huge component. If it aligns with you, it feels good for you. If it resonates, of course. If it doesn't, then leave it. But I just think there is something to be said about that. And maybe in – this is just a tip that I have that I did for my own self was those 2 weeks where you're waiting to get your period and then be on your period feel like hell, you know, when you're waiting to be able to try again. And maybe something you can kind of like lean your focus on is – opening yourself to a connection with the baby on the other side. And maybe that's asking for the baby to show up in your dreams right before you go to sleep at night, or journaling to the baby, talking to the baby in your mind and your meditations and your prayers, you know, beyond just praying to or for a baby, but talking to them, kind of like connecting, like reaching out, maybe lighting a candle, having some kind of like a ceremony. These things seem insignificant, but I really don't think they are. They're part of human history to focus. We know that there's studies about when intention and meditation is pinpointed on one particular thing, you know, those random number generators all change and stuff. If we have our attention and our focus, you and your partner, and it can be something that's really, really intimate and special, if you're both kind of like thinking about these things, and then you can tell each other about it, like, oh, I had a dream about like a baby and it was so cool that, or whatever, you can tell each other about it. But even to just take 5 freaking seconds and light a candle and just think about it for a second is better than nothing in terms of bringing that light, like as if, you know, as you were saying in part one too about, do we attract things to ourselves? Do we like, is it part of our destiny? Is it art? Is it manifestation? Whatever, who knows? But I do think it's like, if we're just going to put a little beacon out there to God, universe, whatever, they're like, hey, I really want this. Hey, let's do this. What's the harm in that? And if anything, to me, I found it just nice because I felt like I was still doing something in that 2 week period. I felt like I was still kind of being productive, or I was still staying connected to this baby and this idea and this want and wish. Because if I didn't do something like that, I just felt like I was wishing for the time to go by and I wasn't being present in my life and what was happening.
Right. Yeah. No, that's so beautifully said. And I'm so glad. And what I want to piggyback off of that, and I know we'll wrap up soon, but I think I understand the reality of sometimes life is busy and it's crazy. And these things that I'm telling you are all of the ideal and you should aim for them all the time, you know, and sometimes that's not the case. So what do you actually do if it's a month where I'm ovulating, you really do have a lot happening, you have to get a quickie in, you know?
Yeah, it's okay.
Having this doing these things that I mentioned, trying to build them into your life to some capacity, having things to pull back on, having some sort of ritual of a grounding practice. So in NLP, they'll do this where I can't even remember the word of it right now, but they'll anchor. It's called anchoring, where you basically pick a movement or some sort of thing where if you touch that or you do this thing, it kind of puts you back into this place. And
oh, like a hypnosis almost.
Sort of, yeah. And it's kind of like it builds neural pathways of, okay, when I do this thing, I kind of, you know, when I hold my wrist, I'm going to like come back into this grounded place or whatever. But having some sort of ritual like that, that helps keep you grounded in the crazy tidal wave that is trying to conceive an infertility, where every time you guys come together, you've had this conversation ahead of time, so you're both on the right path. And whether it is taking a 30 seconds to look in each other's eyes, whether it's lighting a candle, like you said, whether it's if you have a practice of prayer or meditation, or just saying an intention that, you know, what I would say is something like, you know, we're coming together and we are calling in our baby. And I would talk to my baby soul that we are ready to have you if you're ready to have us. We're doing all of the things in our power to like make this optimal for you. And I recognize and understand if it's not the right time, but we're going to like connect together and like create the vessel, you know.
We're going to give you the opportunity.
Yeah, we're going to give you the opportunity and really move through it in that perspective of there's no guilt, there's no shame, or you try to limit, you know, those feelings while you're intimate, where you really come together and say, okay, here we go again. We are giving you another opportunity to join us. We love you. We can't wait to meet you. And we are connected. Your mommy and your daddy love you so much. And we love each other so much. And we're really connected. And you do just something small to connect and bring you back, get you out of your head of work or the stress or the emotions. And know that in this moment, you know, not letting the emotions and fears of like, well, what if it doesn't work? Let that go for just this moment.
Be present. Yep.
And say, in this moment, we are creating this open opportunity. We would love for you to take it. If it feels weird for you to connect with a baby soul, that's fine. You can just connect with your partner saying, you know, I love you. This is my connection with you. And I'm just grounding and anchoring myself to you right now in this moment. Even if you have to go do a quickie with a vibrator in doggy or whatever to just like have, you know, the sperm in your body, you're still bringing intention.
Yes.
To that moment. It's not that every sexual experience needs to be like 2 hours where you're like, there's a roaring fireplace and you're like staring in each other's eyes and like feeding each other chocolates. It doesn't have to be that. It's all about intention. You can have the same experience if it's been talked about. You have foundations to build on, like I've mentioned. And even in those crazy quick moments, you're still connecting and you look at each other and you are a partnership versus you are both suffering in silence on your own sad journeys, because I've been there too. And I don't want that for you. So
I love that.
Come together. And that's
at the end of the day, this baby is an expression of creation and love between the two of you.
Yeah.
And we got to kind of remember that amongst all of it is what you're saying.
Yes. And I know that we're at an hour, but I have one more thing to say, which is if you are going through IUI or IVF, encourage you to have a sacred or special intimate encounter around the same time that you would be doing IUI or IVF, like timing wise. So even though you can't conceive, you know, unassisted or quote unquote naturally, I think it's still important. And if this resonates with you, take it. It was really important for me because Mike and I could not conceive having sex. You know, that was just the reality for us. And we tried many, many times for over and over and over and over and over and learned a lot and still couldn't conceive having sex. So if that is you, I still encourage you to do all of these practices. And even if you realize, oh my gosh, we have to do IVF, don't stop having sex with each other. Don't stop intimacy with each other, because sometimes people are just having sex because they're trying to conceive. And if that is off the table, they start to grow apart because that's no longer required for this baby that they're trying to pursue. They're instead doing injections and doing surgeries and doing all these medications and going to all of the crazy craziness that is IVF. And if that is you, please don't lose yourself in that either. And continue to have the monthly date night, continue to have the intimacy practice and pretend as if you're still trying, you know, regardless. And if you even received eggs, you've done like an embryo, you're preparing for embryo transfer, I still encourage you to have some sort of beautiful, like ceremonial intimacy time together where you still call in your baby soul. You're still calling him in. I still talk to my baby souls. I talked to her. I knew. And it's like, just because we had to take the sperm surgically out of my husband and the eggs surgically out of my body and put them together in a petri dish, it felt very spiritual to me. And we still connected, and I still felt like, you know, we made her little vessel. And I felt like, I personally believe that the soul comes into the body a little bit later, not right at conception, but that's just my own thing. And that I knew she was there this whole time. She's been around me this whole time. And I still felt that connection with my partner as if we made her through love, even though we made her in a lab, because, and she's still an expression of our love. So I just wanted to highlight that it doesn't have to be one or the other, and that if you can't have a baby through sex, that you failed, or that you don't have this beautiful thing, because it can still be beautiful. It can still be this beautiful expression of yourself, and you do not have to feel you know, gypped or jaded in that at all if you don't choose to.
I love that. I think that is so important. And I feel like all of the love and spirituality is sort of taken out of the very sterile, mm-hmm. medicalized aspect of IUI and IVF. And it, like you said, it really doesn't have to be. Mm-hmm. It does maybe take some more energy and focus outside of the experience. But it's like, even just, you know, when you're there in that moment in the transfer, you're like imagining this little baby up there. And okay, we're making your body now, and then yep. you get to come in. Mm-hmm. Like, it's really just a different way of making a body.
Yeah, exactly.
You can think about it like that. I know there's different ways that people we got to recognize everybody's got their different beliefs. But
right.
anyway, I think that's really beautiful. Thank you for adding that. And I really hope that's this episode's been helpful in at least making you feel seen and validated in some of these struggles. You know, we've both been there to different extents, and you can come back, you'll come back to it. Prioritizing your relationship and never losing yourself, even in motherhood later on. And I've gone through that as well. It's you got to come back to yourself. You got to come back to your partnership, because everything is built on that in this whole process of raising children.
Right. Oh, thanks, Maureen. See you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for other women to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.
Please remember that the ideas and views presented in this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. Now go have a wonderful day. You've got this.